Moses and Aaron. Upon Mount Hor, Aaron died and was buried. Moses, Aaron's brother, and Eleazar, his son, accompanied him to the mount. The painful duty was laid upon Moses to remove from his brother Aaron the sacerdotal robes and place them upon Eleazar, for God had said that he should succeed Aaron in the priesthood. Moses and Eleazar witnessed the death of Aaron, and Moses buried him in the mount. This scene upon Mount Hor carries us our minds back to some of the most striking events in the life of Aaron. Aaron was a man of amiable disposition, whom God selected to stand with Moses and speak for him, in short, to be a mouthpiece for Moses. God might have chosen Aaron as leader, but he who is acquainted with hearts, who understands character, knew that Aaron was yielding and lacked moral courage to stand in defense of the right under all circumstances, irrespective of consequences. Aaron's desire to have the goodwill of the people sometimes led him to commit great wrongs. He too frequently yielded to their entreaties and in so doing dishonored God. The same lack of firmness for the right in his family resulted in the death of two of his sons. Aaron was eminent for piety and usefulness, but he neglected to discipline his family. Rather than perform the task of requiring respect and reverence of his sons, he allowed them to follow their inclinations. He did not discipline them in self-denial, but yielded to their wishes. They were not disciplined to respect and reverence parental authority. The father was the proper ruler of his own family as long as he lived. His authority was not to cease, even after his children were grown up and had families of their own. God himself was the monarch of the nation, and from the people he claimed obedience and honor. The order and prosperity of the kingdom depended upon the good order of the church, and the prosperity, harmony, and order of the church depended upon the good order and thorough discipline of families. God punishes the unfaithfulness of parents to whom he has entrusted the duty of maintaining the principles of parental government, which lie at the foundation of church discipline and the prosperity of the nation. One undisciplined child has frequently marred the peace and harmony of a church and incited a nation to murmuring and rebellion. In the most solemn manner, the Lord has enjoined upon children their duty to affectionately respect and honor their parents, and on the other hand, he requires parents to train up their children and with unceasing diligence to educate them with regard to the claims of his law and to instruct them in the knowledge and fear of God. These injunctions which God laid upon the Jews with so much solemnity rest with equal weight upon Christian parents. Those who neglect the light and instruction which God has given in his word in regard to training their children and commanding their households after them will have a fearful account to settle. Aaron's criminal neglect to command the respect and reverence of his sons resulted in their death. God distinguished Aaron by choosing him and his male posterity for the priesthood. His sons ministered in the sacred office. Nadab and Abihu failed to reverence the command of God to offer sacred fire upon their censers with the incense before him. God had forbidden them upon pain of death to present the common fire before him with the incense. But here is seen the result of loose discipline. As these sons of Aaron had not been educated to respect and reverence the commands of their father, as they disregarded parental authority, they did not realize the necessity of explicitly following the requirements of God. When indulging their appetite for wine and while under its exciting stimulus, their reason was clouded and they could not discern the difference between the sacred and the common. Contrary to God's express direction, they dishonored him by offering common instead of sacred fire. God visited them with his wrath. Fire went forth from his presence and destroyed them. Aaron bore his severe affliction with patience and humble submission. Sorrow and keen agony wrung his soul. He was convicted of his neglect of duty. He was priest of the Most High God to make atonement for the sins of the people. He was priest of his household, yet he had been inclined to pass over the folly of his children. He had neglected his duty to train and educate them to obedience, self-denial, and reverence for parental authority. Through feelings of misplaced indulgence, he failed to mold their characters with high reverence for eternal things. Aaron did not see any more than many Christian parents now see that his misplaced love and the indulgence of his children in wrong was preparing them for the certain displeasure of God and for his wrath to break forth upon them to their destruction. while Aaron neglected to exercise his authority, the justice of God awakened against them. Aaron had to learn that his gentle remonstrance without a firm exercise of parental restraint and his imprudent tenderness toward his son were cruelty in the extreme. God took the work of justice into his own hands and destroyed the sons of Aaron. When God called for Moses to come up into the mount, it was 6 days before he was received into the cloud, into the immediate presence of God. The top of the mountain was all aglow with the glory of God, and yet even while the children of Israel had this glory in their very sight, unbelief was so natural to them that they began to murmur with discontent because Moses was absent, while the glory of God signified his sacred presence upon the mountain and their leader was in close converse with God. They should have been sanctifying themselves by close searching of heart, humiliation, and godly fear. God had left Aaron and Hur to take the place of Moses. In his absence, the people were to consult and advise with these men of God's appointment. Here Aaron's deficiency as a leader or governor of Israel is seen. The people beset him to make them gods to go before them into Egypt. Here was an opportunity for Aaron to show his faith and unwavering confidence in God and with firmness and decision to meet the proposition of the people. But his natural desire to please and to yield to the people led him to sacrifice the honor of God. He requested them to bring their ornaments to him, and he wrought out for them a golden calf and proclaimed before the people, "These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." And to this senseless god he made an altar and proclaimed on the morrow a feast to the Lord. All restraint seemed to be removed from the people. They offered burnt offerings to the golden calf, and a spirit of levity took possession of them. They indulged in shameful rioting and drunkenness. They ate, they drank, and rose up to play. A few weeks only had passed since they had made a solemn covenant with God to obey His voice. They had listened to the words of God's law spoken in awful grandeur from Mount Sinai's mount amid thunderings and lightnings and earthquakes. They had heard the declaration from the lips of God Himself, "I am the Lord thy God which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments." Aaron and also his sons had been exalted by being called into the mount to there witness the glory of God. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet as it were a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as it were the body of heaven in his clearness. God had appointed Nadab and Abihu to a most sacred work. Therefore he honored them in a most wonderful manner. He gave them a view of his excellent glory, that the scenes they should witness in the mount would abide with them and the better qualify them to minister in his service and render him that exalted honor and reverence before the people, which should give them clearer conceptions of his character and awaken in them due obedience and reverence for all his requirements. Before Moses left his people for the mount, he read to them the words of the covenant that God had made with them, and they with one voice answered, "All that the Lord has said will we do and be obedient." How great must have been the sin of Aaron, how aggravated in the sight of God. While Moses was receiving the law of God in the mount, the Lord informed him of the sin of rebellious Israel and requested him to let them go that he might destroy them. But Moses pleaded before God for the people. Although Moses was the meekest man that lived, yet when the interest of the people over whom God had appointed him as leader were at stake, he lost his natural timidity and with singular persistency and wonderful boldness pleaded with God for Israel. He would not consent that God should destroy his people, although God promised that in their destruction he would exalt Moses and raise up a better people in Israel. Moses prevailed. God granted his earnest petition not to blot out his people. Moses took the tables of the covenant, the law of 10 commandments, and descended from the mount. The boisterous, drunken revelry of the children of Israel reached his ears long before he came to the camp, when he saw their idolatry and that they had broken in a most marked manner the words of the covenant, he became overwhelmed with grief and indignation at their base idolatry. Confusion and shame on their account took possession of him, and he threw down the tables and broke them. As they had broken their covenant with God, Moses, in breaking the tables, signified to them that so also God had broken his covenant with them. The tables were whereupon was written the law of God were broken. Aaron, with his amiable disposition, so very mild and pleasing, sought to conciliate Moses, as though no very great sin had been committed by the people over which he should feel thus deeply. Moses asked in anger, "What did this people unto thee, that thou hast brought so great a sin upon them?" And Aaron said, "Let not the anger of my Lord wax hot, for now knowest that the people are, that they are set on mischief. For they said unto me, Make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. And I said unto them, Whosoever hath any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf." Aaron would have Moses think that some wonderful miracle had transformed their golden ornaments into the shape of a calf. He did not relate to Moses that he, with other workmen, had wrought out this image. Aaron had thought that Moses had been too unyielding to the wishes of the people. He thought that if Moses had been less firm, less decided at times, and that if he had made a compromise with the people and gratified their wishes, he would have had less trouble, and there would have been more peace and harmony in the camp of Israel. He therefore had been trying this new policy. He carried out his natural temperament by yielding to the wishes of the people to save dissatisfaction and preserve their goodwill, and thereby prevent a rebellion which he thought would certainly come if he did not yield to their wishes. But had Aaron stood unwaveringly for God, had he met the intimation of the people for him to make gods to go before them into Egypt with the just indignation and horror that their proposition deserved, had he cited them to the terrors of Sinai where God had spoken his law in such glory and majesty, had he reminded them of their solemn covenant with God to obey all that he should command them, had he told them that he would not at the sacrifice of his life yield to their entreaties, he would have had influence with the people to prevent a terrible apostasy. But when in the absence of Moses his influence was required to be used in the right direction, when he should have stood as firm and unyielding as did Moses to prevent the people from pursuing a course of sin, his influence was exerted on the wrong side. He was powerless to make his influence felt in the vindication of God's honor in keeping his holy law, but on the wrong side he swayed a powerful influence. He directed and the people obeyed. When Aaron took the first step in the wrong direction, the spirit which had actuated the people imbued him, and he took the lead and directed as a general, and the people were singularly obedient. Here Aaron gave decided sanction to the most aggravated sins, because it was less difficult than to stand in vindication of the right. When he swerved from his integrity in giving sanction to the people in their sins, he seemed inspired with a decision, earnestness, and zeal new to him. His timidity seemed suddenly to disappear. With a zeal that he had never manifested in standing in defense of the honor of God against wrong, he seized the instruments to work out the gold into an image of a calf. He ordered an altar to be built, and with assurance worthy of a better cause, he proclaimed to the people that on the morrow there would be a feast to the Lord. The trumpeters took the word from the mouth of Aaron and sounded the proclamation from company to company of the armies of Israel. Aaron's calm assurance in a wrong course gave him greater influence with the people than Moses could have had in leading them in a right course and in subduing their rebellion. What a terrible spiritual blindness had come upon Aaron that he should put light for darkness and darkness for light. What presumption in him to proclaim a feast to the Lord over their idolatrous worship of a golden image. Here is seen the power that Satan has over minds that are not fully controlled by the Spirit of God. Satan had set up his banner in the midst of Israel, and it was exalted as the banner of God. "These," said Aaron, "without hesitation or shame, be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." Aaron influenced the children of Israel to go to greater lengths in idolatry than had entered their minds. They were no longer troubled lest the burning glory like flaming fire upon the mount had consumed their leader. They thought they had a general who just suited them, and they were ready to do anything that he suggested. They sacrificed to their golden god. They offered peace offerings, gave themselves up to pleasure, rioting, and drunkenness. They were then decided in their own minds that it was not because they were wrong that they had had so much trouble in the wilderness, but the difficulty, after all, was with their leader. He was not the right kind of man. He was too unyielding and kept their sins continually before them, warning, reproving, and threatening them with God's displeasure. a new order of things had come, and they were pleased with Aaron and pleased with themselves. They thought if Moses had only been as amiable and mild as Aaron, what peace and harmony would have prevailed in the camp of Israel. They cared not whether Moses ever came down from the mount or not. When Moses saw the idolatry of Israel and his indignation was so aroused at their shameful forgetfulness of God that he threw down the tables of stone and broke them, Aaron stood meekly by, bearing the censure of Moses with commendable patience. The people were charmed with Aaron's lovely spirit and were disgusted with the rashness of Moses. But God seeth not as man seeth. He condemned not the ardor and indignation of Moses against the base apostasy of Israel. The true general then takes his position for God. He has come direct from the presence of the Lord, where he pleaded with him to turn away his wrath from his erring people. Now he has another work to do as God's minister, to vindicate his honor before the people and let them see that sin is sin and righteousness is righteousness. He has a work to do to counteract the terrible influence of Aaron. Then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, "Who is on the Lord's side? Let him come unto me." And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him. And he said unto them, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, put every man his sword by his side, and go in and out from gate to gate throughout the camp, and slay every man his brother, and every man his companion, and every man his neighbor." And the children of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and there fell of the people that day about 3,000. For Moses had said, "Consecrate yourself today to the Lord, even every man upon his son and upon his brother, that he may bestow upon you a blessing this day." Here Moses defines genuine consecration as obedience to God, to stand in vindication of the right and to show a readiness to carry out the purpose of God in the most unpleasant duties, showing that the claims of God are higher than the claims of friends or the lives of the nearest relatives. The sons of Levi consecrated themselves to God to execute his judgment against crime and sin. Aaron and Moses both sinned in not giving glory and honor to God at the waters of Meribah. They were both wearied and provoked with the continual complaining of Israel, and at a time when God was to mercifully display his glory to the people to soften and subdue their hearts and lead them to repentance, Moses and Aaron claimed the power of opening the rock for them. "Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock?" Here was a golden opportunity to sanctify the Lord in the midst of them, to show them the long-suffering of God and his tender pity for them. They had murmured against Moses and Aaron because they could not find water. Moses and Aaron took these murmurings as a great trial and dishonor to themselves, forgetting that it was God whom the people were grieving. It was God whom they were sinning against and dishonoring, not those who were appointed of God to carry out his purpose. They were insulting their best friend and charging their calamities upon Moses and Aaron. They were murmuring at God's providence. The sin of these noble leaders was great. Their lives might have been illustrious to the close. They had been greatly exalted and honored, yet God does not excuse sin in those in exalted positions any more than he does in those in more humble positions. Many professed Christians look upon men who do not reprove and condemn wrong as men of piety and Christians indeed, while they think that those who stand boldly in defense of the right and will not yield their integrity to unconsecrated influences lack piety in a Christian spirit. Those who stand in defense of the honor of God and maintain the purity of truth at any cost will have manifold trials, as did our Savior in the wilderness of temptation, while those who have yielding temperaments, who have not courage to condemn wrong but keep silent when their influence is needed to stand in defense of the right against any pressure, may avoid many heartaches and escape many perplexities. They will also lose a very rich reward, if not their own souls. Those who are in harmony with God and who through faith in him receive strength to resist wrong and stand in defense of the right will always have severe conflicts and will frequently have to stand almost alone. But precious victories will be theirs while they make God their dependence. His grace will be their strength. Their moral sensibility will be keen and clear, and their moral powers will be able to withstand wrong influences. Their integrity, like that of Moses, will be of the purest character. The mild and yielding spirit of Aaron and his desire to please the people blinded his eyes to their sins and to the enormity of the crime that he was sanctioning. His course in giving influence to wrong and sin in Israel cost the lives of 3,000 men. In what contrast was this is the course of Moses. After he had evidenced to the people that they could not trifle with God with impunity, after he had shown them the just displeasure of God because of their sins, by giving the terrible decree to slay friends or relatives who persisted in their apostasy, after the work of justice to turn away the wrath of God, irrespective of their feelings of sympathy for loved friends and relatives who continued obstinate in their rebellion, after this, Moses was prepared for another work. He proved who was the true friend of God and the friend of the people. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses said unto the people, Ye have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up unto the Lord. Peradventure I will make an atonement for your sin. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, Oh, this people have sinned a great sin, and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. And the Lord said unto Moses, Whosoever has sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Therefore now go lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. Moses supplicated God in behalf of sinning Israel. He did not try to lessen their sin before God. He did not excuse them in their sin. He frankly acknowledged that they had sinned a great sin and had made them gods of gold. Then he loses his timidity, and the interest of Israel is so closely interwoven with his life that he comes with bold